credibility is a leader's currency. With it, he or she is solvent. Without it, he or she is bankrupt. With credibility, leaders connect. Without credibility, leaders disconnect. That being the truth, giving you a lesson on how to connect is going to be huge because it's your currency. With it, you're going to do well. Without it, you're not going to do well. So let me define connection. I think connection is the ability to identify with people and relate to them in such a way that it increases our influence with them. I think that's what connection is all about. And I want to give you two credibility comments. Number one, establishing credibility takes time. It just takes time. If you're new to a job, or if you're new to any kind of situation where people don't know you, for the first 6 months, your words, what you say, is more important to them than what you do, because they don't know you yet. So they have a tendency to listen to you and take what you say as face value and who you are. So the first few months, what you say weighs probably more heavily upon people than what you do. And by the way, that's why so many people do well the first 6 months, because they just talk well. You know, there comes a time when you got to produce. There comes a time when you got to bring home the bacon. But in the first 6 months, it's not show and tell time. It's just tell time. John Wooden, my mentor, who's now 98 years old, great legendary coach of UCLA Bruins, used to tell his players, don't tell me what you're going to do. Show me what you're going to do. I want to see it. Well, in the area of credibility, the first 6 months are the easiest months that we have, because we haven't been around people long enough for them to know not only what our strengths are, but what our weaknesses are. But here's what happens. After about 6 months, it turns. People know me enough, people know you enough to realize that our words perhaps don't match up with our action. And so after about 6 months, credibility overrides communication. The first 6 months, communication probably has the upper hand on credibility. But after a while, that scale tips, and all of a sudden, who you are becomes more important to the people that are following you than what you say. A credible leader, the longer you stay, the better it gets. In other words, if your actions and your words match up and you're really credible, the longer you stay, the better it gets. It just gets better because what you say, what you do are the same. The non-credible leader, the longer you stay, the worse it gets. Because they begin to figure out, oh, well, he's just talking. And the effectiveness of the communication relies more, here we go, on the character of the messenger than on the content of the message. Character overshadows content. Let me give you an example of that, and I'm very careful. In fact, I hesitate using this example, and yet it's just a great example to use, but it has no political overtones, undertones, anything. In fact, if you read anything politically in it, you need therapy, okay? Because I'm teaching leadership. I'm not talking politics. But we have a new president, and we're excited about him. I certainly want him to do well and wish him very well and wish our country well. Let's put it this way. We need him to do well. Are you with me? We all need him to do well. So if you're not wishing him well, just be whole, will you? Be whole. But right now, we are judging his leadership on what he says. Now, by the way, that's not wrong. How do you start as a leader? By casting vision, what you say. And so right now, basically, we look at Barack Obama, our president, through the grid of this is what he says, this is what he plans to fulfill, the promises, etc. Okay. In a year from now, we'll judge his leadership entirely differently. Because by then, we'll begin to see outcomes of decisions that are being made. Now, by the way, if he's right, which I'm pulling for him to be right, if he's right, well, that means is a year from now, he's going to be more credible as a leader a year from now than he is now. Isn't that true? Because he's done it right, and he's got the words, and now he's got the action. And if the opposite is also true, if what he says or his plan doesn't work, no matter what he says, he can say, oh, well, you know, we need another stimulus plan or whatever. But I mean, if it didn't work, he's not going to get followed. Right now, he gets followers because he's on the front end. And I want you to see that. I want you to see that because here's what happens. A lot of people, they go in the front end and they connect with their words and they connect with what they say. And then they stay in that company for a period of time, and all of a sudden things begin to fall apart, and they'll say, I wonder what happened. It was so good then, and back then we did this, and I can tell you exactly what happened. You stayed long enough that a person realized that your words and your actions don't match. By the way, that works in marriage. Hello. It works on the job. That works in relationships with your neighbor. All this stuff is in this area of credibility and character and matching your actions and your words. But it takes time. It takes us time to establish credibility. And the second quick comment I got to make is establish credibility equals trust. I would recommend a book to you. I read it before it was a book. I read the manuscript. Stephen M. R. Covey called me and wanted me to do the foreword on his book, The Speed of Trust. So he sent it to me, and I read it. I got very excited about it, and it's out now. It's a very, very good book. And here's what he says in the book. The beauty of trust is that it erases worry and frees you to get on with other matters. Trust means confidence. Here's his thesis. Low trust is an unseen cost in life and business because it creates hidden agendas and guarded communication, hereby slowing decision-making. A lack of trust stymies innovation and productivity. But trust, on the other hand, produces speed because it feeds collaboration, loyalty, and ultimately results. What Stephen M. R. Covey basically says is if people trust you, you can make decisions quicker than if they don't trust you. If people trust you, if you and I are credible with people, they'll buy in quicker. There'll be a higher morale. There'll be a higher energy to it. All of that is, and that's why I call it the speed of trust. What he really is saying is trust allows you to speed up to success. Trust allows you to speed up growth in your company. Okay. There are three questions that followers ask leaders when they are following. Question number one is, do you care for me? In other words, why would I follow somebody that doesn't care for me? That's simple. Question number two, can you help me? That's a valid question. I know people who care for me but can't help me. Are you with me? Don't you? Hey, I know people who can help me but don't care for me. I don't want them either. So you don't substitute. It's not like either or. Can you help me? Do you care for me? But there's a third question. And this third question has to be answered yes, or else people won't follow me. They won't follow you. And the question is, do I trust you? Do I trust you? Who wants to follow somebody that they don't trust? Who wants to follow somebody that isn't credible? Okay, now, we've got all the foundation set. Here are the Ten Commandments of credibility. Some of them I'm going to give them to you real quick. Some of them I'm going to take a little time. Here we go. Number one, connect with yourself. If you want to be credible with people, you have to first of all connect with yourself. Now, let me read a little bit. Let me talk just a little bit on this. We must understand ourselves before we understand others. Once we know ourselves and like ourselves and feel comfortable with ourselves, then we can potentially connect with others. You see, knowing ourselves is a result of self-assessment. I mean, where we do some assessment on ourselves, and here's what I do well, here's what I don't do well. Liking ourselves is a result of self-talk. These are the things I think and say to myself. My good friend Zig Ziglar, I love this statement. He says, the most influential person who will talk to you all day is you. So you should be very careful what you say to you. Isn't that huge? What's Zig saying? Very simply, here's what he's saying. You got to connect with yourself. If you don't like yourself, guess what? You won't like people. If you're suspicious of yourself, you'll be suspicious of people. If you're insecure about yourself, you'll be insecure about people. I wrote a book called Winning with People, and one of the Winning with People principles is the mirror principle, and that is what you see is what you get. And it has to start with you, and it has to start with me. In fact, feeling comfortable with ourselves is a result of self-confidence. And the relationships that we have with others are largely determined by the relationships we have with ourselves. We see others as we see ourselves. We feel about others how we feel about ourselves. That's just absolute fact. Now, what am I saying in commandment number one? I'm saying very simply in commandment number one, you got to connect with yourself. Hey, if you can't connect with yourself, you can't connect with others. If you're trying to still figure yourself out, you aren't going to figure anyone else out. I was with a friend of mine the other day. what he said to me surprised me. And I felt very affirmed by it. I wasn't even looking for the compliment because that wasn't the purpose of our conversation. But he was trying to, he's known me for some time, and he was trying to kind of break down my influence and my leadership and giftedness. And he said, John, I've observed and watched you for a long time. And he said, you're more comfortable with yourself than anybody else I know. He said, you're just comfortable in your own skin. And I thought about it, I thought, I am comfortable with myself. As you can tell, I'm comfortable right now. I mean, how many speakers do you know put their elbows on the table and lean back and drink their bottle of water and laugh with you? And I know that I am. And I am for a lot of reasons that are beyond anything that I could do for myself. So the purpose of this is not, the purpose of this part of the talk isn't to brag on myself because, let me tell you something, because I'm comfortable with myself, I could now go into deep lectures about my weaknesses. In fact, I'm glad you're here for just one day. I can do success in one day. If you wanted failures, it'd take me a week. You understand? I've got more weaknesses than strengths by far. I mean, in fact, I'm abnormal there. Margaret says it's 10 to 1. In fact, I was talking to her about my strengths the other day. We were having lunch, and I think I have 4. And she's kind of now breaking it to me slowly that I've got 3. And I think what happens is, you go 3, and then you have 2, and then you have 1, and then you die. I think I've got this figured out, so I'm hanging on to my strengths as long as I can because I know what's at the end. You know what I mean? Okay, next. Okay. But what I'm saying to you is to connect with others, you just have to be comfortable with yourself. Do you listen to some people speak and they just make you nervous? Or you're just saying, oh God, help them. Help them. And then after they speak for 5 minutes, you're saying, oh, help me. Yeah. You know, help us all. You know, help us to, you know, deliver us. Get us out of here. You know what I mean? Okay. Commandment number 1, connect yourself. Number 2, right wrongs. Very simple. If you want to have credibility with people, the things that you do wrong, make them right. Here we go. Credibility is the bond between leader and follower. It is almost sacred because it forms the bedrock of why people want to do what leaders ask them to do. Sometimes a loss of credibility occurs because a leader makes a mistake. If a leader's credibility becomes damaged, what can the leader do? By the way, let me just stop here for a moment. All of us make mistakes. Are we okay with that? How many of you have made one mistake in life? Let's see those hands, please. Thank you very much. Today. Thank you. People don't look at leaders as mistake-free or smarter than anybody else or the fact that my leader always makes good decisions and I'm a follower and I always make bad decisions. No. We all make mistakes. We all have times when we do something wrong. Okay? The issue is not, did I do something wrong? The issue is, how did I respond to that? Did I right my wrong, or did I take my wrong and ignore it? Because we lose credibility not because we did something wrong. We lose credibility when we don't come back and say, I did something wrong. So what do you do? 3 things. Acknowledge the mistakes. As a leader, you just acknowledge mistakes if you want to have credibility with people. When decisions do not turn out the way that they are intended to, the leader owes his and her followers an explanation. In other words, when I make a decision that doesn't turn out right, I need to stand in front of you and say, bad decision. Again, I am not being political, so please don't put anything in this. I'm just teaching you leadership. In fact, if this is too emotionally hard on you, leave. So this is not a political statement. This is a leadership statement. But when President Obama was putting his cabinet together and he had Tom Daschle with the tax issues, you know what my favorite part of the Obama presidency has been so far? When he looked at the camera and he said, I screwed up. I thought, oh, there's my leader. I love it when a leader says, I screwed up. Because can I tell you something? You will. And let me tell you something. If you don't admit it, everyone else knows it. They're all sitting in the room saying, just screwed up. And let me tell you something. People get very insecure when they think they know something their leader doesn't. I wish President Bush would have understood that. Instead of looking at the cameras and saying, I can't think of any mistakes I've ever made. I mean, everybody in the country says, let me give you a list of 30, 40. You know, can I send them in to you? And again, I'm not being political at all. I'm talking leadership. Grow up. But what I am saying is, admit your mistakes. In fact, I was speaking to a group of COOs, CEOs, and presidents, about 120 of them, and I told them, I said, you need to go home to your people, and you need to tell them your weaknesses. And, oh, I mean, it tensed up. I mean, it got real tense. I mean, I felt emotional resistance when I told him that, and I was signing books, and one of them stood beside me, and he kind of waited till everybody was gone. He's like a dark cloud, to be honest with you, and finally, I was alone. He said, you know, I need to talk to you privately. He took me back in the corner. He said, I'm bothered about you talking about us going home and talking, or back to our business, talking about our weaknesses. And then he gave me this kind of, you know, suck it up, never let them see you blink, you know what I mean, and yeah, rah, rah, rah. And so I did he did the Rambo thing for about 5 minutes. So I let him run out of gas, and I said, sir, I said, I'm sorry. I said, you just have a major misunderstanding. I said, it's okay. There's something you don't know. He said, well, what don't I know? Of course, now he's even more nervous. I said, you think your people don't know your weaknesses. They already know them. They talk about them all the time. I said, they already know what you don't do well. I said, the only reason I told you to go home and tell them is so that they know that you know. That'll make them feel better. They'll say, oh, whew, he knows. Oh, he knows. Oh, okay, now let's get back on the team. Good, good, he knows. I thought he was an idiot. He knows. Acknowledge the mistakes, letter A. The next day, apologize. And the way you apologize is not saying sorry. 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 No, the way you apologize is, I'm sorry. Nothing sorry about it. You're sorry. I did it. I'm sorry. I made the wrong decision. Stick that I at the front of the sentence and capitalize it and stay there long enough till they understand it is you that know that you made a mistake. And the third A is amends. Fix it. What's wonderful about leadership is the fact that can also happen. You can make amends. You can fix it. One of the great things about leaders is they are in control many times of their destiny and the people's destiny that they lead. And go back and not only admit and apologize that you've done this, but then make amends to it. A few years ago, I was out in Palm Springs speaking for a friend at a major leadership conference, which they put a lot of money in. They had maybe 2,000 or 3,000 people there. And I just made a horrible mistake. To this day, I just kick myself. I keep a pretty good record of what I speak on when I speak at different events so that when I go back, I make sure I don't repeat my stuff, or at least repeat main lectures. And somehow I slipped up, and I'd been here a couple years before to this audience, and I went back, and I literally did the same speech again. And I could tell something was not right, but I couldn't figure it all out, and I went ahead and did it, and it was all done, and I went back to my hotel room, because everybody's nice to me. You know, they clapped. They were nice. Yeah. And I just said, something's wrong. And so I called my sister, Linda. I said, Linda, go back in my records. And sure enough, I found a mistake. And so I went out to dinner with him that night. And I'll call him Ralph. That wasn't his name. I said, Ralph, I said, I'm so sorry. I owe you a major apology. Here you put up all this money, all this effort. You have this conference, and I came in. I gave the same speech 2 years ago. And I said, I got to do two things. He said, what? I said, can you let me tomorrow? I was going to go out later on tonight. Can you let me stay till tomorrow morning so I can stand up there and apologize to those people? I said, I've got to ask them, forgive me. I mean, this was horrible for me to do that. And I said, secondly, will you let me come back next year to your conference free? I'll pay all my expenses. I'll pay the hotel. I said, I have got to come back. And by the way, I'll give them another speech, a different one. Now, all I'm going to say, I'm going to stop and move on to the next point on the commandment. It's very simple. Make it right. Just make it right. And if you say, well, I'm not sure I've made it right yet, then make it right more. Until you know beyond a shadow of doubt, you've just done what a leader should do. Commandment number 3. This is kind of like the last one, so I won't take so much time. Take responsibility. The third commandment, if you want to be credible with people, you've just got to take responsibility. When you make a commitment, you build hope. When you keep a commitment, you build trust. Oh, I like that. So it's more than making a commitment, it's keeping that commitment. That gives you the hope and trust. And all of the great leaders I know take responsibility. When I told you about being in Hillham, my little first little church, let me tell you something. Larry Bird grew up in French Lick, which was right by Hillham. The Hillham had 11 houses, two country stores, and then French Lick was a suburb 5 miles away. It had about 1,200 people, and that was a suburb of Hillham. And so when he grew up, he was a little junior higher. His mother would bring him to our church. Of course, he was a great basketball player. Dude, I mean, a great basketball, but the only great white basketball player ever. And the Celtics were playing a game, and it was like 5 seconds left, and they were behind 1 point. And this is when Casey Jones, this is a long time, you got to be old to know this, but Casey Jones was the coach, called timeout, and he got his board out, and he started diagramming a play. And while he was diagramming a play, Larry Bird looked at him, and he said, "Coach, get me the ball and get everybody else out of my way." And Casey Jones looked at Larry Bird, and he said, "I'm the coach of this team, and I'll call the plays." Then he took his players, he said, "Listen, all of you get out of the way, we're going to give Larry Bird the ball." Now, the point that I'm saying is, Larry did what all people that are leaders do. They want the ball. Are you with me? Give me the ball. And let me tell you something. Here's one of the things you can always tell. You can always tell your credible people and your leaders by the fact that when the game is on the line, there are some people that hide from the ball, and there's some people who want it. Responsibility gives you great credibility. Commandment number four. If you want credibility with people, be accountable. Be accountable. In my book, The 17 Laws of Teamwork, one of the laws I teach is the law of accountability. And the law of accountability just says others can count on me when it counts. It's one of my favorite laws. By the way, there's no such word as accountability. That's why I like it so well. I made it a law, and there's no such word as it. In fact, my editing team came back, publishing team came back and said, "You can't use the word accountability because it's not a word." And I said, "Yeah, I can. I'm the author. Let it be a word." I spoke it and wrote it into existence. Almost made me feel godlike for a moment. But I love the word accountability. You know, others should be able to count on you. I'm an accountable person. But in the area of accountability, in fact, let's say this. Maybe the greatest compliment a leader could ever receive from his or her people is that his or her people can count on them. Boy, that's where leadership really steps up to the line. Now, let me just say quickly two things about accountability. There's accountability that I have to myself, and there's accountability that I have to others. The accountability I have to myself is in the area of my strengths, the things I do well. I honestly don't need to be accountable in the area of my strengths with most people. I don't need to be accountable to you on how I communicate or write. That's my strength zone. I'm really good at that, to be honest with you. I need to be accountable to myself. When I say I got to be accountable to myself, I've got to do it with integrity. I've got to have a high standard. I've got to do it with effort and discipline. In my strengths, I'm accountable to myself. Now, so you say, "John, who am I accountable to others?" It's very simple. In all of my weaknesses. In your weaknesses, you need to be accountable to others because I'm weak in my weaknesses. And I need to have somebody come alongside of me that'll help shore that up for me and help me be accountable. Okay, commandment number five, lead like you live. Lead like you live. Jim Rohn, who I've learned an awful lot from, said, "You cannot speak that which you do not know. You cannot share that which you do not feel. You cannot translate that which you do not have. You cannot give that which you do not possess. To give it, to share it, and for it to be effective, you first need to have it." The speaker looks at his message as a lesson to be given. The communicator looks at his message as a life to be lived. For one, the message can be an exception of his life. For the other, the message must be an extension of his life. For one, content is the most important issue. For the other, credibility is the most important issue. How are we doing? Commandment number 6. My stuff is just intellectually stimulating, isn't it? I mean, I'm just sitting back myself, just overwhelmed at my brilliance and depth. And I'm just amused because I'm looking at commandment number 6. Oh, John, you idiot. Commandment number 6, tell the truth. Tell the truth. Yeah. Just tell the truth. Honesty adds integrity to the vision and credibility to the vision caster. Just tell the truth. I was speaking recently to, again, a large group of executives, and they were in a Q&A, and the topic was hiring. And so they were wanting to know what were my keys. You know, at one time I've had 3 companies. What were my keys to hiring people? Because they were wanting some insight on how to hire well. And when they asked me the question, I started laughing because I was a terrible hirer. And so here are all these executives wanting to know from me how to hire well. And so I started talking, and I said, the best decision I ever made in hiring, of course, they're right here. The best decision I ever made in hiring was the day that I stopped hiring. And they looked at me, and I said, I quit. In fact, all of my companies greatly improved when I stopped hiring. Now, that's a fact. It's not modesty. It's a fact. I'm a terrible hire. In fact, if you need a job, you would want me to interview you. You'd just walk in the room, and if I was interviewing, you'd say, God answers prayer. Because I'm a terrible hire, and I'm going to tell you why I'm a terrible hire. I'm a terrible hire. I believe too much in people. If you believe highly in people, you're a terrible hire. Oh, yeah. I'd have somebody walk in the room and they hadn't done really well in the last couple of jobs, and I'd say, I can help them. My goodness. Shoot. You need to be on my team. I make people like you. Oh, yeah, I can hardly wait. You remember what I said earlier? Don't take your ducks to Eagle School. I hired ducks all the time. I mean, they quacked on the way in. They waddled all the way up to the table. You know, they put their little tail down and, you know, quacked while I talked to them. And all the whole time I thought, yeah, I'll make you an eagle. Oh, yeah, we can fly. I believe I can fly. I believe we can fly. One of the greatest days of my business career is when I quit hiring. I got some cynical son of a gun. The person that should be hiring is a person that their own mother doesn't like them. In fact, the test anymore, when I get ready to hire somebody to hire, I said, I call the mother, do you like your son? No. Got my man. Yeah. Can't be somebody who believes in people, because what if you believe in people? You take anybody and say, oh, sure, this will work out. We can pull this together. Now, wait, here's what when I looked at those executives that day, and when they asked me these hiring questions, and I told them the best decision I ever made about hiring is I quit hiring people, you should have seen them. In fact, I said, I quit. I just quit. That was a great day of my life when I gave it up. First of all, they just kind of looked and said to each other, I could see their mind. They were saying, why are we paying him? Why are we sitting here listening, taking notes to this guy? And then they started laughing. And then it just became wonderful laughter because I told them the truth. I'm not any good at it. And if you learn to tell the truth, it's just amazing. All the stuff, I mean, for example, I'm asked almost weekly to be on somebody's board. And I tell them, I say, you don't want me on your board. I'm not a good board member. I don't like boards. I get bored at boards. I ask too many questions. I'll stir up trouble. I'll show up late. Yeah, I'm a terrible board member. You know how freeing it is to tell people how bad you are? It just, first of all, it just frees your schedule up. It's a wonderful thing. It's just, people say, John, where do you have all time to write and all this? So it's very simple because I can't do anything else. And I tell people I can't do anything else, and I'm very comfortable with I can't do anything else. It's very healthy for me to say it and very invigorating for me to say I'm bad at that. It's wonderful because everybody else knows. And it's just always nice when the person that should know knows. Oh, on the telling the truth, you're so good. I don't have time to tell this, but it's just too good. I mean, I can't help myself. I'm going to read it to you, and I think it's hysterical, and it's about a wife who told the truth, and it doesn't really fit the lesson, but I just love it. A woman accompanied her husband to the doctor's office. After the checkup, the doctor told his wife, if you don't do the following, your husband will surely die. Number one, each morning, fix him a healthy breakfast and send him off to work in a very good mood. Two, at lunchtime, make him a warm, nutritious meal and put him in a good frame of mind as he goes back to work. For dinner, fix him an especially nice meal. Don't burden him with any of the household chores. And lastly, have sex with him several times a week and satisfy his every whim. On the way home, the husband asked his wife attentively what the doctor had said. She replied, "You're going to die." Oh, do I love that story. All right, enough of this foolishness. Commandment number 7, be an example. Be an example. The most powerful leadership phrase that Jesus ever uttered was, follow me. Wow. People do what people see. Commandment number 8, be vulnerable. Be vulnerable. To some people, being a teacher or a leader means appearing as though you have all the answers. By the way, that was a huge mistake I made as a young leader. I thought I had to be Mr. Answer Man. Any sign of vulnerability or ignorance is seen as a sign of weakness. Those people can make the worst teachers, says Parker Palmer, a longtime instructor and the author of The Courage to Teach. He says, sometimes the best answer a teacher can give is, I don't know. Instead of losing credibility, that she gains students' trust, and that trust is the basis of a productive relationship. We all know that perfection is a mask, so we don't trust the people behind the know-it-all mask. They're not being honest with us. The people with whom we have the deepest connection are those who acknowledge their weaknesses. Our lives improve only when we take chances. And the first and most difficult risk that we can take is to be honest with ourselves. Be vulnerable. Number 9, the 9th commandment of credibility, follow the golden rule. Just follow the golden rule. Treat others as you want to be treated. It really works. Wisdom is knowing the right path to take, and integrity is taking it. I have a wonderful friend who for several years was the president and CEO of Synovus that was always ranked as one of the top 10 companies in America to work for. His name's Jim Blanchard, and in fact, several years ago I interviewed him, and we played golf together some, and in fact, I wrote a book called Ethics 101, in which I have a chapter on him, which is basically the golden rule, and this is what's amazing. I said, Jim, how did your company become one of the top 10 Fortune comes in America where people said they like to work for it? He said, it's very simple, John. He said, we only have one rule in our company. I said, what is it? He said, the golden rule. He said, everybody knows that we treat each other as we'd want to be treated. In fact, he said, every year at our annual meeting, when we get everybody in the room and on teleconferences already all over the country, he said, our annual meeting, he said, one of the things I do is I give everybody in my company my cell phone number, my personal cell phone number. And I say, if anybody in this company treats you wrong, call me. He said, when they instituted the golden rule at Synovus, he said in the first 2 years, 1/3 of the executives were fired. They weren't treating others as they should be treated. Now, I'm not talking about the fact that as an executive, you've got to make a hard decision, and there are times that you have to make decisions that are very difficult. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about treat others as you would want to be treated yourself. And let me just say this one other thing about this. I really have a hard time with people that have power. And anybody that's a leader has power. Anybody that has influence has power. Anybody in a leadership position has power. I have a very hard time with people that have power. In fact, let me put it this way. I think I can tell the character of a person that has power more by how he or she treats. I hate the way I'm doing this, the phrase, but it's the only way I can teach it. How he or she treats people lesser than they are. Does that make sense? And lesser, I don't mean lesser in value in God's sight. My goodness sakes, everybody has equal value in his sight. So I hate that term, but I'm trying to teach it, contextualize it for me, if you will, and help me to understand, or help yourself to understand it. What I'm saying is, if you have power up on somebody, it tells me an awful lot about your character of how you treat them. And boy, when I see a person that has that power and that influence, and I see them belittle people or talk down to people. I was in South Africa changing planes to go over to Botswana last week, and a supervisor talked down to one of the people in the airlines. There was a long line, and there was a real mess up, to be honest with you, and just came right down in front of everybody and just dressed them down. And it bothered me so bad when the supervisor left and pulled away, I went to the supervisor. And I thought, you know, I've just got to do a leadership teaching here. Yeah. And I'll do this for free. Don't have to pay a registration for it. Don't have to buy a notebook. In fact, you only have to buy one of my books. And I just say to you, and I got to finish this lesson up. I just got to say to you that value people. Value them. And don't just value the people that bring value to you. Hello, anybody does that. But value people. Value people. And I think the greatest way to show value in a people is following the golden rule. Okay, commandment number 10. Deliver results. If you really want credibility, deliver results. In other words, be a producer. And I'm going to just let you sit back because I'm going to read you a couple paragraphs. I want to talk about Mother Teresa. Okay? Because when you think of delivering results, you don't think of Mother Teresa. You think of saint, godly, servant. Let me just give you a little background. A sister working in the slums of Calcutta, she brought food, medical assistance, etc., to help the street people. Realizing strengths in numbers, she found a missionary order to carry out her good intentions. Their continual presence in Calcutta reminds the rest of the world of the obligation of the less fortunate. As word of her work spread throughout the world, she became a willing participant in selling the mission to those who could be of assistance. She badgered popes, princes, presidents, celebrities, all in the name of her mission. She communicated her zeal for her mission through her writing and her public appearances. Her example reminds us of what it takes to make a difference. She radiated holiness, pure and simple. She was drawn to the poorest of the poor, and as a result, the world was drawn to her. She was Mother Teresa, founder of a religious order and a Nobel Prize winner. She lived as she died in Calcutta, attending to those in need. One of the ways she was able to achieve what she did, always for others, was through her unique ability to communicate. Through prayer, meditation, interviews, through her own writings, Mother Teresa demonstrated an ability to bring people to her cause. She founded her order with some of the fellow nuns in 1948 with no funds to speak of, and upon her death nearly 40 years later, her order had grown to include 4,000 nuns and 120,000 lay workers treating the disenfranchised who were suffering from leprosy or AIDS, as well as hunger, malnutrition, in some 400 missions around the world. How did Mother Teresa accomplish so much? Number one, she understood the power of words. She knew what she said carried influence. Number two, she was true to her beliefs. Number three, she did what was right regardless of the cost. In fact, I love this paragraph. While visiting Beirut in 1982 at the height of the fighting between the Muslims and the Christians, Mother Teresa wishes to retrieve a group of spastic children who were isolated in an abandoned hospital. The priest says, it's a good idea, but it's impractical because the hospital is in the free fire zone, to which Mother Teresa responds, it's not an idea. It's our duty. and her assistance, a ceasefire was arranged, and the children were rescued. And she experienced the joy of giving. She experienced the joy of giving. Isn't it amazing, such a producer that gave such credibility and such a quiet, humble lady. I say this and I close the lesson. It's very simple. Trust, credibility. It's what a leader lives on. And when trust is gone, there becomes a leadership vacuum. And here's the good news. All of us can be trustworthy. It's a choice. Back to my definition of success, those who are the closest to you and know you the best, love and respect you the most. That's credibility.